welcome to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus, and on the web at kuci.org and on iTunes at College Radio. Today is Wednesday, November 14th, 13th, 14th, I don't know. Somewhere in the middle of November we sit, and it is 2012. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and Writers on Writing, as always, is dedicated to writers, books, and publishing, and my guest today for the entire hour is literary agent Regina Brooks. Before we bring her on, I want to just remind all of you we're still in the midst of a fun drive, and I hope someone out there will make our phones ring. Your donations are how we keep the lights on. We're all volunteers here, and actually, when we make calls out for guests, we pay for our calls. The DJs and public affairs hosts themselves, fortunately, guests often call in because they understand, as Regina has today. You can pledge anything from $5 on up. A $100 pledge gets you a seat here in Studio A during the show, where you help, host Writers on Writing or any show here on KUCI. And a $35 pledge brings you a T-shirt, CD, books, whatever you want. Everything's tax deductible. The number is 949-824-5824. And Paul is out there answering the phones. And if you're listening to the podcast later on, when I get this up on the site, you can donate any time during the year. It always helps. Anything helps. Forever. And you can just go to KUCI.org and do it that way and look at the premium list and all that. In any case, I'm going to bring on Regina. I'm going to introduce her and also tell you that if you have questions for her, you can text me at 949-337-2752. Please don't call, just text, because I also engineer the calls. I mean, the show here. The phone's ringing, so I'm getting excited. In any case, my guest today is Regina Brooks. She's the founder and president of Serendipity Literary Agency in Brooklyn, New York. Writer's Digest has named Serendipity one of the top 25 literary agencies. Regina's agency represents a diverse base of award-winning clients in adult and young adult fiction, nonfiction, and children's literature. She's held senior editorial positions at John Wiley & Sons and McGraw-Hill Companies. Regina is a frequent panelist at the ASJ Writers Conference, which is where I go every April in New York. You can find it at asja.org, and as a matter of fact, Regina is the focus of my Voices on Writing feature in the November issue, which you can find on the website or go directly to the newsletter at asjamonthly.org. She's the author of Writing Great Books for Young Adults, Source Books, You Should Really Write a Book, How to Write and Sell and Market Your Memoir, published by St. Martin's, and that's what we're going to focus on today. Let's bring her on. Hi, Regina.
Hi there, Barbara. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being on the show. I became familiar with you through the ASJA panels, because I think the last couple of years you've been on one called First Pages, where pages are read either a query or the first page of a novel or memoir or primarily nonfiction, and the panel of agents respond, and I find that panel really interesting and have always found your take on things really interesting as well. So I'm so glad to have you here where I can talk to you.
I'm glad to be here. I always find that some conferences they call it first pitches, first pages, idol, literary idol. Mm-hmm. It's a tough for the writer. Sometimes it can be a tough place to be in because you're kind of on the spot, listening to feedback on your query letter or on your manuscript.
Yeah, well, speaking of query letters, because that seems to be where it all begins, between a writer, author to be, and an agent. When a query comes in, what causes you to respond either positively or negatively just right off? I mean, do you have a gut reaction from the first line? Is it the first paragraph? Do you read the entire page before you kind of assess how you feel about what you've just read?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, there's a lot that can be said about a query letter. Maybe we should, I don't know how advanced your audience is, but maybe we should just tell people a little bit about what the query letter is.
Definitely.
And why it's so necessary in the industry. And I'll start by saying that basically a query letter is a cover letter that is designed to tell the agent and or the editor a little bit about yourself, about the manuscript, and also about why they should be interested. So if you think about it as a cover letter, you know, with when you add a cover letter to a resume, it's kind of a way to amplify what's already going to be included in the resume. In the same way with a query letter, you want to try to help people get really excited about taking a look at your manuscript. And oftentimes, what you write about your writing can be more difficult than the writing itself. I find that a lot of people, and even myself, you know, as an agent, while we don't do query letters, we call them submission letters.
Mm-hmm.
And a submission letter is basically the same thing. We're trying to get an editor excited about taking a look at the manuscript. And they can be very difficult to do. So just know that, you know, the query letter process and the development of it is, you know, we sometimes are challenged with it as well. And the reason they're so important for us is because we use your query letter to help us write our submission letters. So what do I look for? Basically, I need you to give me like a one-sentence hook about why I should be interested in the project or what the project is about. You're also going to want to define in the query letter by writing a paragraph about what the book is about. In addition, you're going to want to tell us a little bit about who you are. A lot of people err in the fact that they'll put like some, you know, personal information about, you know, the fact that you have two dogs and a cat. In the query letter, we don't need that type of biographical information. We're ideally trying to find out what your writing credentials are and what ties you to the topic or to your narrative and why we should be excited about your potential to sell the book.
Okay. So can you tell then, as soon as a query comes in, just how you're feeling? I mean, or do you kind of parse and figure out through, you know, what the writer's trying to say, whether this is something you want to possibly see, you know, see the full manuscript, see the proposal?
Well, I think, let me break it out into two different categories.
Okay.
For fiction, oftentimes, a really creative or catchy title will grab my attention, and that'll make me want to read more. Also, if the author kind of is able to tell like where their book will fit in the marketplace, that kind of can get me excited. Like, although I don't want to hear, oh, this book is just like Harry Potter, or this book is like Twilight, but if you can give me a sense of how it compares to some of the other books in the space, that often helps and gets me excited. And then oftentimes, if you're able to, like, I always encourage people not to get really dry in their query letters. So if you have this really funny, humorous, exciting manuscript, and then you write your query letter as though it's a form letter, if the materials don't match, oftentimes that can kind of turn me off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you like query letters to sound like letters as opposed to maybe written in the third person describing the book project, describing the author?
No. You can write it in the third person, absolutely. You can write it in the third person, or you could write it in the first person. It just really depends on the project itself.
Mm-hmm.
The main thing is to get the information out so that we can get excited about it. And to go back to your question, your original question, are there things that kind of get me excited or make me want to read on? You know, in the nonfiction side of things, if you can explain to me some of the things that you've done in and around the topic, so if you have a blog or you've published articles about it, or you have this wonderful community of people who are listening to what you have to say about this topic, that oftentimes can get me excited. I typically look for three things, and we can talk about this in more depth, but the query is an ideal place to make sure that you include these three things. You want an incredible hook. You also want to show that in some ways that you are a strong writer. Sometimes that may mean you indicate that you have an MFA. Sometimes the quality of the writing actually can show forth or show through in the query itself. And then the third thing I often look for is a platform. And again, we can go into a little more detail about that, but those are the three things: quality writing, a platform, and a very exciting hook.
Mm. So you mentioned, you know, the hook, and I'm thinking, and what I see a lot with writers is, and with myself, is if I can't come up with a hook or a pitch line, maybe the project isn't there yet, isn't ready to either go out, or isn't focused enough.
Yeah, oftentimes that is the answer, that is the reason. You know, when I get pitches, I do conferences quite a bit, usually between 20 and 30 a year. And oftentimes they have a situation where you're sitting down one-on-one with an author, and you're asking them to tell you, you get maybe 5 minutes, sometimes five, sometimes 15. But you're given this period of time where you're asked to, the author is asked to tell us a little bit about the project and also a little bit about themselves. And oftentimes you're supposed to be able to do an elevator pitch, which is basically what can you say about your project in the, during the time that you're on an elevator, which mm-hmm. is a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be able to deliver enough about the book, about the flavor of the topic, that will whet the agent's appetite enough to get them excited about wanting to ask for the remaining material. And you, again, the golden rule of pitching, I would say, is to show and don't tell. So if there's there's ways that you can do that in a way that gets a person really excited about it, you're oftentimes golden.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You are listening to Writers on Writing, and I am on with Regina Brooks. Her book is You Should Really Write a Book, How to Write, Sell, and Market Your Memoir by St. Martin's. We're going to talk about that in a minute. I want to remind you that there's a fun drive going on here, and if you'd kindly call 949-824-5824 and make however teensy or great a pledge, we will love you forever and ever. And the station will stay alive. Let's talk about your book and why you wrote it.
Yeah, so I just mentioned a little bit before that I do 20 to 30 conferences a year. And again, usually we as agents, we'll sit down and do one-on-ones with authors. And I would say if I'm at a conference and I, during the course of a day, I see 30 authors, 10 of those authors are typically wanting to write memoirs. They want to tell their own story. And I would say of those 10 authors, 5 of those authors are trying to write in the same subgenre of memoir.
Mm-hmm.
So say, for example, it might be health. Unfortunately, in this society, we have had too many people who have experienced breast cancer. And as a result, there are a lot of people who want to tell their stories,
mm-hmm.
how they've overcome this, you know, oftentimes horrific experience. And if I've hearing 5 stories about breast cancer recovery at one conference, and you remember I mentioned that I do about 20 to 30 of these a year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at 5 times 20. You guys can do the math. As one agent, I may have, during the course of a year, heard a story or have been given a pitch about breast cancer recovery 100 times. Very, very difficult to sit and hear one-on-one about someone's horrific experience, or even the incredible journey that they experienced to come over, to get to the other side of that. And to think in your mind, wow, I would really love to work with this person, but I just heard a very similar story a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason I wrote this book was to help people understand how to take their topic and make it incredibly enticing for an agent. So you're not, you take yourself out of being the one of 100 stories that I've heard, and you make yourself the one that I want to take on and submit to a publisher.
Mm-hmm.
The other reason I wrote this book is because there are so many people out there with incredible stories, and when they send their material to me, they just don't have the three criteria that I mentioned, which is the hook, the platform, and the incredible writing.
Mm-hmm.
And they may have, some people show up with one of the three, some people show up with two of the three, but in an ideal situation, we want you to have three out of the three. And the book kind of goes into detail about how to get a manuscript ready to include all three of those things. So you as the author, and I oftentimes say too, if you come to an agent with two out of the three, oftentimes they'll help you get to the third.
Mm-hmm.
You can't come with one. So for example, if you are an incredible writer and you have a wonderful hook for your story, but then you don't have a platform, oftentimes as an agent, I will try to help you get to that third thing, which is the platform. I'll come up with ways for you to build your social media platform, to get articles out, to tie into other places where they're talking about the same topic, so that when I take you to a publisher, you have the three out of three.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, your book is so useful and interesting, and I love how you break it down, and you break it down into three parts, and part two was especially interesting where you categorize the various, the categories, coming of age, addiction and compulsion memoirs, transformation memoirs, travel and food memoirs, religion and spirituality memoirs, and outlier subgenres. And of those, is there any one that's more, at least right now, more desired by editors than the other, or are there too many memoirs out there to begin with? Or
there are a lot of memoirs out there. In fact, today I'm going to the National Book Awards, and they're on the list of the five nonfiction books that they've selected. I believe two of them are memoirs.
Hmm.
So there are certainly a number of memoirs out there, but it doesn't mean that there is not room for more.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that there are always going to be addiction and compulsion memoirs. There are always going to be coming-of-age memoirs. I will say, though, some of the editors are really interested in some of these sub-genres and outliers. And, like, for example, they kind of trend. So there have been a number of books about memoirs about dogs.
Dog wars.
Memoirs. And it's funny because recently, as a result of the success of some of those memoirs, people have come to me with pitches about all different types of relationships they have with animals, whether it be from chickens to donkeys to hamsters, and all the things that they've learned about themselves through those animals.
Mm-hmm.
So it can get kind of fun. People really exploring their lives and coming up with things that they've been able to learn about themselves and others through narratives about animals. So that is definitely a category that I would say editors are still interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dog wars, I think you call them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear you read from your book. Would you do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if you just tuned in, you are listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI-FM in Irvine, and Regina Brooks is going to read from You Should Really Write a Book, How to Write, Sell, and Market Your Memoir, published by St. Martin's.
So I'm going to start with, I'm going to start with the beginning of the book in the introduction, and then I'm going to talk about three behaviors that enhance your chances of writing a memoir that sells. So let me start out. In the introduction, it's the title is More Than an Interesting Story.
Okay.
It's spring in Boston, and I'm sitting with a panel of other publishing professionals listening to an accomplished and elegantly groomed young woman who, hoping to get published, is delivering the final book pitch of the day. She describes a time that left her praying that she would die, and she had tried to, and yet here she is. Hoping to inspire others with a memoir of prevailing over impossible circumstances, she is one of the scores of conferees attending the Harvard Medical School's workshop, Publishing Books, Memoirs, and Other Creative Nonfiction. This annual course, attended by participants of various professional backgrounds, including Harvard Medical School grads, surely brings together some of the smartest aspiring writers in the country. I am one of several literary agents among a larger group of publishing professionals invited to help individuals strengthen their writing chops and polish the 70-second story pitches that they hope to one day see expanded into books. And what of the young would-be writer? After listening attentively to our advice and encouragement, this young woman, whose personal details have been changed for the purpose of anonymity, returned to the audience, joining other conferees, leaving me deeply moved by her presentation. Despite her arresting presence and the dramatic events in her life, I would not be willing to wager whether her story will ever be transformed into a manuscript that I or any agent can sell to an editor for publication. After 15 years of listening to pitches and reading thousands of query letters and first chapters, one of the things I know for sure is that just because something interesting happened to someone doesn't mean that she has the makings of a memoir. In today's book business, a good story simply isn't enough. People may have told you that the events in your life have been so dramatic that you should really write a book. The challenge, though, is not only how to write the story and make it readable, but how to sell and market it, too. While this book does not aim to give you line-by-line writing, editing, or structural advice, it is designed to show you how to turn your dream of writing a published memoir into a reality, from conceiving the story to selling and marketing it. So I'm going to skip ahead and talk about three behaviors that enhance your chances of writing a memoir that sells.
Okay.
Number one, feed your passion. Dreaming is one of the few remaining delicious pastimes open to the public that's absolutely free. There's no better way to remain passionate than to dream big. Some writing guides discourage authors from aiming for the bestsellers list. You won't hear that from us. That's like telling a hard-working high school student to forget about applying for Harvard. We wouldn't dare talk to you in that manner. Surely you realize that while many aim for the top, only a few make the cut. And at the same time, passion can act as a fuel. It may make all the difference in the quality of your writing and in forming a relationship with readers. It can keep you moving ahead, doing much of what is recommended here in your determination to get your book to market. Trust us when we say that you don't want to turn off editors, the guardians of publishing houses' purse strings. If editors perceive you, actually I'm going to go back, you will not, however, want to give free rein to passion, especially if it comes off sounding like bombast. Brooke Warner, former executive editor for Seal Press and now operating Warner Coaching, to help aspiring writers get published, she says she's turned off by authors' displays of grandiosity, boasting, or grandstanding. When she hears from others that their manuscripts are the greatest or amazing, she becomes wary. I want the quality of the manuscript to speak for itself, she says. Trust us when we say that you don't want to turn off editors, the guardians of publishing houses, purse strings. If editors perceive you as having poor social skills, they're likely to keep their purses shut. Number two, demonstrate self-awareness. Have you ever dated someone and not allowed yourself to get close because you couldn't figure out the other person's intentions or where the relationship was headed? Readers are pretty much the same way. That doesn't mean that they're looking for something formulaic, quite the opposite. But they will see right through you and probably quit reading if you present yourself without clarity. Okay. And then number three, I'm going to skip that. Tell the truth. If there was ever evidence that many memoir readers feel they're in a relationship with their favorite authors, it can be found in their reactions after they've learned that they have been lied to. Their responses are similar to those of lovers who discover that someone they've trusted has cheated on them. They feel angry, betrayed, and disgusted. And then I'll go to... I think I'm going to stop there.
Okay. Now, that's all good stuff. And if you've been listening, you didn't catch the beginning of her reading, I have Regina Brooks on with me today, and her book is You Should Really Write a Book, published by St. Martin's. We're going to take a very quick break. We will be right back with more Regina Brooks. And the phones are quiet out there, so make them ring, 949-824-5824. I'll be right back.
Darling, hate to see you go. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. My heart's full of sorrow, mama aching tears. We gone 24 hours, child, seem like a thousand years. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time. Darling, one month better than a day. Let's talk it over before you go away. Come back, baby, let's talk it over one more time.
Greetings, fighting anteaters. Bill Nye, the science guy here, and CEO of the Planetary Society, featured on Planetary Radio Thursday nights here on KUCI. And when I'm in Irvine, I do what you do. I listen to KUCI, I support it on KUCI.org, and I turn it up loud. Call now and make your pledge to KUCI, or visit us on KUCI.org. Contribute. Improve the quality of life in Irvine for all the anteaters and the other citizens as well.
The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. For more information on this or other KUCI programs, visit KUCI.org or KUCITalk.org.
And welcome back to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM. We're broadcasting from the University of California, Irvine campus. I'm Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I've been here since the top of the hour with Regina Brooks. Her agency in New York is Serendipity, and I'd like to bring her back on. Hello.
Hello.
You know, along the lines of what you just read to us, say you think, like everybody, you've had interesting experiences.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know you have a story? I mean, how do you kind of distill it down to go, you know what? We all think we're interesting, we've had interesting lives, but this really is a story that I need to tell.
I think, you know, I do believe that people will tell you who you are, and they will also tell you that you should write a book. And I do believe that there's truth in that. When you're sitting in your cubicle at work and you're telling a friend about something that has happened to you, and they say, oh my gosh, you should really write a book about that. I do believe that there's some truth in that. I think the key is trying to figure out what that book is and how to make it a real book. I often tell this story about a client that I'm working with currently. His name is Ray Miss. I met him at the conference that I was talking about in the book. He's blind, he's deaf, and he's a gastroenterologist.
Hmm.
Exactly.
Interesting.
You see that response?
Mm-hmm.
That response is the response that I want to get when I am reading a query letter. I want to be able to say, oh my God, okay, I need to hear about this.
Mm-hmm.
I need to hear this story. And that's that hook. That's that thing that makes you and the audience say, wow. And the way I've captured that is you want to be able to make an agent or an editor smile. And it's an acronym for how you know whether or not you have a strong hook. And SMILE stands for, sorry, not an acronym, but an anagram. The SMILE stands for shocking, memorable, inspiring, loving, and or entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know that your hook has a few of those things, it's oftentimes that an editor or an agent is going to get excited about it, and then it boils down to whether you can write. But oftentimes you'll hear a story from a friend, and they may say, and you may think, oh, I have a really good story to tell. I'm going to write about it. I'm going to tell my story in a memoir format. And as they're listening to the story, they're thinking, gosh, I had that same experience. Or that's the same experience that my other friend had. And to some extent, that's a good thing, because you want a memoir to have a universal connection with a core group of people. But the key is being able to tell that story in a way that gets people excited about hearing your twist on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, if you go back to those things, shocking. When I mentioned the author who's writing the book, who's blind, deaf, and a gastroenterologist, met him, I said to him, there is no way that I'd let you do colonoscopies on me as a person blind and deaf. So the original story became, when we first started working with him, I thought that the hook was going to be, how does he do that? How does he make that happen? And when he came to me, I thought he had a great hook. He wasn't a writer, and he actually didn't have that much of a platform either. So as I was saying earlier, I usually want two out of the three. Well, he only came with one. But I was able to help him find a writer to work with him to help get the story out. And I also was able to help him get some people behind him. From a corporate standpoint, there were companies who were interested in working with him, like Olympus, who develops the machinery that allows him to do his job. And also there was Beltones, who makes the hearing aid that he uses. So those companies had a natural tie-in to his story.
Mm-hmm.
So again, oftentimes as an agent, you're putting your thinking cap on, and you're trying to figure out, okay, what can I do to really make an editor excited about this project? And so, at any rate, the original story was going to be the story about how does he do that. And then, as we started hearing more about the story, and the story cart started to come together more, then we realized he actually lost his license, and in order for him to, when he lost his hearing, And in order for him to get his license back, he had to find a whole host of people who would allow him to do colonoscopies on him, on them. And so the whole community, and he lives in Rhode Island, the whole community in Rhode Island kind of rallied around him. And he was able to get people to allow them to do colonoscopies on him. So that's the inspiring part. So the first part was shocking, like, how does he do that? The second part was inspiring, like, you get totally inspired by the fact that this community of people are really coming around to rally around to help him get his license back. Hmm. So then I realized that a lot of the people who were coming to help him were a part of his church, and he had like, and as a Catholic, so the original story was, how does he do that? So the memoir was more of a technology, how technology and humanity work together for the good. Then it turned into more of an inspiring type of story where you have community coming around. Is that the hook? Then the third hook, which we landed on, was how that it almost turned into kind of a religious memoir, mm-hmm. because we found out that religion was the thing that kind of helped him throughout the entire process to stay grounded and to inspire him to carry on. Mm. So there's so much to the story. It's one story. It's one man's story, but it can be shaped and told from so many different angles. And I think that's important to know because in my book, I talk about the different categories mm-hmm. of memoir. As an agent, I need to know where we're going to fit the story. Is it a coming-of-age story? Is it a travel memoir? Is it a addiction and compulsion memoir? We kind of need to know what the subcategory is so that I know who to sell it to, because editors who do food memoirs are not the same editors who might do a military memoir, mm-hmm. right? So when you're coming to an agent or an editor saying, okay, I'm working on a memoir, it's ideal if you could tell us where you think that memoir fits in the marketplace.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, and earlier you said, you know, in terms of writing memoir, you need to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. So how much latitude do you have then to condense, to embellish? I mean, this is something that comes up over and over again, and I think all writers at this point know you can't out-and-out lie or fictionalize and still call it a memoir, but, you know, for the sake of brevity and the sake of storytelling, how much can you play with what happened?
Well, you can definitely combine, it's very difficult oftentimes to know exactly what a person said to you 15, 25 years ago.
Right.
So you can kind of guesstimate and deal with kind of a paraphrasing of what that conversation was like. So that's one thing. And a lot of people get kind of caught up in, well, I don't remember exactly what he said to me. You can kind of guesstimate what the content of the conversation was. And then the other thing is about
embellishing.
So I actually have a full section in the book about the embellishment process. And most people know when they're lying and uh-huh. when they're embellishing.
Right.
And when you're kind of telling the story not in its truest form. And a lot of times it's very situational. So I'm trying to think of a good example. Let me see if I can find it in the book real quick. As you maybe ask me another question, I'll come back.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, as you're looking for that, I'm curious to how many editors might you send or might you pitch to before you reassess whether, you know, this project is going to go ahead, and do most of the books that sell right away?
Well, I can answer that quickly. The first question is, how many editors do we send the project to? Ideally, before I take on a project, I like to know in my head that I have at least 5 to 7 editors that I think will the manuscript or the story will resonate with. And the way I know that is because I've had conversations with editors, we've had lunches, they've talked about their sensibilities to me, and I know, I kind of have a pretty good sense of the kind of things that they like. And ideally, I like to, again, have 5 to 7 editors in my head that I can consider.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't think of 5 to 7 editors, then the project is probably not for me. Maybe it's for another agent. And I start with that, and then depending on the type of memoir it is, there might be 20 editors I could send it to, or just those 5 to 7. So it really kind of depends on the category. But I typically send it out to as many people as possible.
And then will, if a book's going to sell, will it sell right away, or might it be the 20th editor?
Oh, you'll hear numerous stories about people who have been rejected over and over and over again for their memoir or for any type of fiction or nonfiction. So it could easily be that 20th person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And another thing, too, is the fact that editors are moving around constantly. So if I send a project to an editor at HarperCollins and she decides, this is not for me, normally I can only send the project to one editor at an imprint. But because people are moving around constantly, I may have hit my 20th editor, and then maybe 2 months later, the editor that I sent it to at HarperCollins, they may be gone, so I can go back and find out either who their replacement is or if there's someone else now covering or taking care of that topic, and then send it back to that same publishing company.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be 20 in the first round, and then some others may come up just out of circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's something, like, if you're working with an agent, it's good to talk about that, too, because just because you've submitted it to a publishing house and to an editor at that publishing house, things change a lot. There's so much fluidity in the marketplace right now. Just when you... something can shift.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you find your spot in the book?
I didn't, but I'm still looking.
Okay, well, I still have more questions, and that is,
okay.
Talk about how clients come to you, because I know a lot of new writers don't have relationships with writers who have agents who can refer them,
right.
Who can, you know, provide that introduction. And so, do you read your slush pile? Do you like to meet writers at conferences or on panels? I mean, what's the best way for a writer who does not have a referral from someone who is your client to approach you and to get your interest?
Yeah. Authors come to me in various ways, either through referrals, like you just mentioned. Sometimes they'll come, I meet a lot of people at conferences, and the authors that go to conferences kind of show me that they are committed to their craft, and they're wanting to understand and learn about the publishing process and how to make their project better. So I tend to like working with authors who are committed in that way. But there are all kinds of ways to get noticed. For example, I'm doing a contest right now for my book, Writing Great Books for Young Adults.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who's interested in working on on a young adult novel, I'm doing a contest with, it's called the YA Discovery Contest, where all you have to do is send in the first 250 words of your novel. I call it No Query, No Pitch, No Problem. And basically, as a writer, you should be able to capture an agent's attention in the first, 250 words.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, this contest is designed to help people hone their manuscripts, but especially those first 250 words. So anyone who's interested, I have a great series of editors who are participating from all the major houses, whether it's Random House, Simon & Schuster, Viking, Penguin, Sourcebook, Scholastic, Bloomsbury, and so forth and so on. And the contest runs this month. This month is NaNoWriMo Month, which is National Novel Writing Month. And The key is to submit the first 250 words, and we have a team of editors who will judge, and the winner will receive a copy of that book, Writing Great Books for Young Adults, but they also get a chance to submit their entire manuscript. And in the past, we've had some of the winners have gone on to get their books published by those editors.
Mm, great.
So anyone interested in that contest, you're welcome to either go to my website or it's also on the Gotham Writers website.
And give your website address, too.
My website is serendipitylit.com. That's SERENDIPITYLIT.com. And a lot of people get really cool, very interested in this contest. It's a fun contest, but it's, again, it's a way for you to get noticed by editors as well as agents. And another way that you can get people excited about your work, whether it be through contests or going to conferences, is other communities. I encourage people to join writers' communities. Again, for the children's book writers, there's SCBWI, which is Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. And then there's also, for all those people out there who are interested in working on memoirs, there's also an association for memoir writers as well. So any type of writing that you're working on, there's probably an organization or an association that focuses on that category. And it's a good place to meet agents, editors, and other people who are writing in your genre.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important, too, because you can't be, today, you can't be the kind of author that just kind of sits back, writes the book, and then waits for the book to sell itself. You need to have other authors who are friends, who can, you know, blurb your book and give you endorsements. There's a lot of authors who are helping to promote each other. You really, as an author, you really want to be a part of a community.
You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday about a novelist friend of mine who was on the show a couple of weeks ago, Joanne Mapson, and mm-hmm. she has Italian greyhounds as pets that she's rescued, and she, some years ago when she started rescuing these dogs, she joined you know, greyhound boards, websites, blogs, whatever, online.
Yeah.
And now with her book, she has this whole group of readers that she did not have before.
Right. Exactly. And not only do they help you, you know, with blurbs, but again, you need to find readers. You need to find people who are going to read your book and talk about it. That's one of the, you know, a lot of people get excited about the fact that they've been on, you know, the Today Show or, you know, have gotten these great media hits. But what sells books the most is other readers telling people that they should go out and get the book. And with that in mind, I encourage anyone who is going to pick up the book, You Should Really Write a Book, that if you like the book, go, please, please talk about it. Share it with your friends. Put it on one of the review sites, whether it's Barnes & Noble, Amazon, any of the indie bookstores, wherever you've purchased the book.
Well, what about Goodreads? What do you think about Goodreads? Is that a good place to get readers engaged?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I will say, the people on Goodreads are sometimes brutally honest. So you'll get a combination of good reviews and bad reviews. And I do encourage people to check Goodreads out.
I was wondering if, because my agent mentioned Goodreads and loves it, and it seems like it's sort of becoming the virtual book tour beginning.
Well, I will tell you also that that the publishers really pay attention closely to it, and it's a place where they give out free copies. They're always doing mm-hmm. some type of an incentive through Goodreads. My book, for example, I think maybe a couple of weeks before it came out, we did an incentive through Goodreads. They'll often give copies of some of their the books that they feel are going to have a good life or a good good attention. They'll give samples of the book out early. The publishers are definitely taking advantage of that site.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We are coming to the end of our time. Do you have any sort of last words or words of advice for the writers listening that perhaps we didn't get to but should have?
Sure. Well, one thing I want to say is that you had asked the question about how do you know whether you're embellishing. I'm going to do a blog on that so that people who are listening and want to learn a little bit more about that, because I didn't get a chance to fully answer that question.
Okay.
And you can go to my website for the book, which is youshouldreallywriteabook.co, not .com, it's .co, and I'm going to do a blog on that topic, so you can take a look at that, about telling the truth and embellishment and how to work through characters. So that's that part. And then what I really want to say is, you know, if your audience were in the room with me right now, and I asked the question, how many people in the audience have been told that they should write a book? I would say that probably everyone in the audience would probably raise their hand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And the honest to God truth is, I think that that's true. I think you really should write a book. And what I'm here to tell you today is that there are books that are commercially viable that you might see on the bestseller list. But then there are books that tell your story for your family, your friends, or just a group of people that are of like mind. And there are so many opportunities for you to get your book published today. You can self-publish it. You can publish it as an e-book. There are wonderful websites where you get to do some of this stuff for relatively inexpensive. Smashwords is one of those sites where you can put it up as an e-book. There's assisted self-publishing. There's self-publishing. You make the decision whether you are ready to make the commitment to do a commercially viable book. And once you've made that commitment, you get those three things, the incredible writing, the hook, and a platform, and I or any agent would be willing and ready to see your manuscript and to champion it to get it published. So I encourage you all to really go out and write your book, tell your story, and let the world hear it.
Oh, that's great. Regina, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Oh, I very much enjoyed it, and I look forward to hearing from your audience.
Yeah, we might get you out here one day and do one of our salons.
Absolutely, so absolutely.
That would be
Barbara,
great.
Barbara, thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Regina Brooks, and her book is You Should Really Write a Book, published by St. Martin's, about writing memoir. And it's a great read, and it's a great book on the process of writing memoir and what to do, how to do it. We're still in the midst of a fun drive. I'm going to play a little promo here for the fun drive, and our next show is going to begin, but you've been listening to Writers on Writing. My website is penonfire.com. It's kind of replacing the blog where I'm posting podcasts of the show. I think I just put one yesterday. What was it? It was Constance Hale, who was on a few weeks ago, along with Tatiana Soli, who was on a few weeks ago, who both have new books up. So there's also fun stuff. Check out the fun stuff link. And it's my new website. So let me know what you think. And thanks again for listening to Writers on Writing on 88.9 KUCI FM in Irvine. See you next week.